Hello, everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD. Folks, today we're going to talk about the sentencing and the penalty that was meted out to this man you see on the screen, Chad Daybell. Right now, I guess it's sort of old news since it came down yesterday, but he receives a sentence of death in the Doomsday triple murder cases, actually. And one of the things you notice when you look at this man, he always seems to have the same dumb, expressionless face. Did he even understand what was going on in the courtroom? Did he even understand these were his victims? His wife, Tammy Daybell, Joshua J.J. Vallo, Tylee Ryan. I mean, I don't think this guy ever appreciated that or ever, you know, owned up to it, that he just sat there with that blank expression on his face. Chad Daybell, murder trial verdict. Conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception in regards to Tylee Ryan. First-degree murder, Tylee Ryan. Conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception, J.J. Vallo. First-degree murder, J.J. Vallo. Conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, Tammy Daybell. First-degree murder, Tammy Daybell. Insurance fraud, Tammy Daybell. So across the board, and it didn't take the jury very much time to come to this decision that puts this man to receive the death penalty. And again, we could talk about how many years it's going to take for that to actually happen, because it seems like in these cases, the appeals are endless. But if there was ever a man who deserved this, and a man that seemingly doesn't have any moral compass whatsoever, I think he's half evil and half mentally ill. That's the only way I can describe it, but not mentally ill to the point where he doesn't or didn't understand his actions, just mentally ill to the point that we shake our heads and say, how was he able to take the three lives on the screen, Tammy Daybell, Joshua Vallo, 7 years old, Tylee Ryan, 16 years old. It's just tough to imagine that he was able. And of course, in this picture, Lori Vallo, his co-conspirator, equally as evil, equally potentially as mentally ill as this guy. But again, not mentally ill to the level that they don't understand their responsibility in this horrific, horrific crime. So folks, hold on to your hats, hold on to your seats, hold on to your wig, your toupee, whatever you have that you need to hold on to. You're about to enter true crime from a police perspective. You're about to enter the off-the-cuff zone. You're about to enter the police off-the-cuff zone. There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped in 10th and Grant, Michael Weiler.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger. Chad Daybell, the Idaho man in the alleged doomsday killings, is sentenced to death. Chad Daybell was convicted on Thursday in the murders of his first wife and two children of his current spouse, Lori Vallo Daybell. The couple's extreme beliefs drew attention to this case. An Idaho judge on Saturday sentenced Chad Daybell to death 2 days after he was found guilty of first-degree murder and other charges. In the 2019 killings of his first wife and two of his current wife's children, capping a case that drew scrutiny because of the couple's doomsday religious beliefs. The decision came after jurors took more than a day to deliberate during the special sentencing proceeding in the case against the man, Chad Daybell, age 55, in Ada County District Court in Boise, Idaho. Earlier on Saturday, the jury had recommended the death penalty before the judge ordered a short recess to make a final sentencing decision. As the judge, Steve W. Boyce of the 7th Judicial District, read his decision, Mr. Daybell sat with his hands in his lap, expressionless at the defense table. Defense lawyers did not have any questions when asked by the judge. You know, that's why I say this case is a mixture of evil and mental illness. Is that a normal reaction to being sentenced to death, sit there with your hands folded in your lap? I think not. So to help me discuss this and to help me dissect this a little bit is retired NYPD Sergeant Mike Geary, professor at Albertus Magnus College and attorney Mike Geary. Let's welcome Mike Geary to the show. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bill. Thank you for having me on. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming.
You know, Mike, this is so many cases we've been covering lately are like borderline, and not just borderline, but death penalty cases. And one of the things that we all have to realize with these death penalty cases, someone can absolutely get sentenced to the death penalty, but not have it carried out for 20, 25, 30 years. And that's why many people would almost prefer life without the possibility of parole, except we're seeing that doesn't mean anything anymore. How many people were sentenced in the 70s and 80s to life without the possibility of parole, right, and are now getting paroled, specifically in New York State?
Yeah, Billy, it's a political question, and it's one that really bothers people in law enforcement, people, district attorneys. Yeah, in any state where there's a death penalty, and there's like, I think, about 25 states and now have the death, still have the death penalty, there's always automatic appeals. So whenever a person is sentenced to death, you can you know that it's going to be at the very minimum, it's probably going to be 3 or 4 years at the very minimum, because there's always going to be at least one automatic appeal to the state's highest court. If Mr. Daybell and his attorney get very busy, they could try to tie this up in state court for many years and then move on to a federal court to see if they can get an injunction in a federal court and have a hearing in a federal court. Yeah, I wouldn't expect really Mr. Daybell, if he will ever be executed. I don't think it'll happen anywhere within the next, 15 to 20 years, unfortunately.
You know, Mike, which is sort of unbelievable when you think of all the victims in this case and the diabolical nature of these two defendants, Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell, and the fact that not only did they do this premeditatedly, but they did it for the profit motive. They did it to make money on insurance policies. They were two really, and look, when you mix religion with evil, it gets more evil than almost any other possible thing in this world.
Yeah, Billy, the profit, besides having a double murder and having murder of juveniles, you also have murder for profit. So there's at least three grounds for imposing the death penalty on this case. There probably was not a lot that the defense attorney could do in the second half of the trial, which was the part where the jury decides the sentence, because that's always separate from the guilty, not guilty deliberations. But he probably didn't have much to work with. Pictures speak a thousand words. Mr. Vallow is a very hollow human. He probably is a narcissist.
Daybell, Mike.
Daybell, I'm sorry.
It's easy to mix these names up. There's hyphenated names. Daybell, the wife is Lori Vallow.
Thank you. Yeah. I have a feeling that there's not much going on in between his ears. And that said, and that he was allowed to be in control to the point where you have he and Ms. Vallow suddenly now engaging in this sort of conduct. Justice delayed is justice denied. So unfortunately for many people like me and you and Phil and many of the viewers, this is an example, a real prime example of will justice really ever be served? And if it is, you know, how many decades from now will it be served?
Absolutely. Let me play this from yesterday.
That we just touched on, but I want to bring it to your attention again. We do have breaking news in this case. Take a look at your screen. Justin Lum, a reporter from Fox 10, tweeting, breaking, Chad Daybill sentenced to death for the murders of J.J. Vallow, Tylee Ryan, and Tammy Daybill. Daybill, the so-called doomsday prophet, he was sentenced to death after he was found guilty on all counts in his triple murder case in Idaho. Just this past week on Thursday, a jury found Daybill guilty of killing his wife, Lori Vallow's two youngest children. That was J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan, and his previous wife, Tammy. Now, the bodies of J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan, they were found buried in the Daybill backyard back on June 9th of 2020, nearly 4 years later. The fate of Chad Daybill has finally been decided by a jury in Ohio. I do want to pull up some photos of the victims. These are the two children that were killed in that horrific attack that happened already 4 years ago, nearly 4 years ago.
You know, Mike, not only did he kill them, but they buried them right on their land. Like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, it's just, you know, the one boy there is 7 years old and the young lady is 16. So, you know, it's just hard to believe. And then I really do applaud states that still have the death penalty, because a person like this not only deserves the death penalty, but I wish there was a clause in it that we could say he gets an expeditious death penalty.
Yeah, Billy, I personally am not in favor of the death penalty. I think it's cruel and barbaric, yet I do have a lot of exceptions to that rule. And one of the exceptions is anyone who harms a child or an elderly person. To me, I'll make an exception to my beliefs about the death penalty, and I'll be all for it. I know that's a little hypocritical, but that's how I feel about it. I think that this idea that he's there's some sort of doomsday cult or whatever, I don't know. I think that's a little bit of a fantasy nonsense that was thrown in there, maybe as part of a defense to say that maybe there's a semi-religious idea or foundation for what he did. I don't think so. I think this is all about the money. And sadly, invoking religion or invoking some sort of cult thing, I don't know. I think it's all about the money. And he and Lori did this. And the idea that they would get away with it and have the children's remains in the backyard, that is not a well thought out, well considered plan. That is not a person who is really, working on all cylinders. You know, the evil that he got away with is shocking. And so hopefully there will be justice. Hopefully he and his attorney won't really try beyond a single appeal to the, you know, automatic appeal to the state's highest court. Hopefully that if they do impose death penalty, it will be fairly quickly, you know, maybe by the end of this decade.
You know, Mike, what's an unbelievable piece of trivia here is that 2 weeks after Tammy Daybill's death, his wife's death, he got married to Lori Vallow. Two weeks. You know, it just like, what does that say to the criminal justice system, the police, the prosecutor, the public? Like, I mean, that what that does to for me, it screams guilty. You know,
right. It's like, wait a second, what's going on here? Anytime that happens, you're like, okay, wait a minute, that wasn't coincidence. Obviously, there was a prior relationship. And within 2 weeks, they're married. And so Tammy's death was part of the plan to get those two together. And very sad, But as an investigator, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes. Man, that rings alarm bells in your head. You're like, I got to take a look at this case. I got to go over this with a fine-tooth comb. I want to know the insurance proceeds. I want to know how long they're married. I want to talk to everyone who knows this couple. I want to find out when he and Lori may have begun their relationship. Oh, yeah, that just screams out, look at me, look at me, look what I've done. It's stupid. And thankfully, in a way, thank you. Thanks to his stupidity and his idiocy, he really, screwed himself over. And that's a good thing.
Absolutely. Let me get back to this.
To the day. And then you see here Chad's previous wife, Tammy, who he was also found guilty of murdering. Earlier this week, we did hear victim impact statements throughout the courtroom as a judge worked to sentence Chad Daybell. We do have this reporter package from Justin Lum. He was there at the courtroom, and he has been covering this extensively since these murders were first announced. Let's listen to a full recap of what we heard throughout the week.
Before the jury went into deliberations, the jury also heard 9 victim impact statements. Unlike his wife, Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell chose not to address the court for an allocution. In the sentencing phase for Chad Daybell, he chose not to present mitigation evidence, a chance to prevent the death penalty. The prosecution also chose not to present additional evidence, but listed aggravating factors, such as the money made off of 3 murders and the depravity of how 2 young children were killed. Daybell's attorney once again blaming the children's mother, convicted murderer Lori Vallow, who is Daybell's wife.
That bomb that came into his life was a woman who previously had been married 4 times. And that bomb brought chaos to Chad Daybell's life.
Kay Woodcock, the grandmother of J.J. Vallow, says every year J.J.'s birthday passes and he would have just turned 12.
There's a hole in my heart, in the hearts of every member of my family, that can never be filled and will remain for the rest of my life.
J.J. and his big sister, 16-year-old Tylee Ryan, murdered by their mother, Lori Vallow, and Chad Daybell, buried in his backyard until discovered in June 2020.
It's taken a toll on my family, my health, and my overall perspective. And it felt like the world had become a more dangerous place.
Several family members spoke on behalf of Tammy Daybell, suffocated in the middle of the night, leading to a quick funeral arrangement and countless questions about her sudden death.
My sister was ripped from our lives. Because of her murder, we lost a beloved mother, grandmother, sister, aunt, and daughter. She is irreplaceable.
Finally, closing arguments as the prosecution reminded the jury that Daybell led the way in rating these same victims as dark spirits before the murders.
He exhibited that power to those around him. He exhibited that power of his self-proclaimed visions to those who believed him and followed him.
The last execution done in Idaho was in 2012 by lethal injection. Last year, though, the governor of Idaho did sign a bill into law allowing execution by firing squad as well. I'm Fox 10 investigator Justin Lum.
Thank you again to Justin Lum. We have really relied on his reporting throughout these past few years when it comes to this case. He's really covered it in such immense.
So you could see how many people have been affected by this case. How many family members gave victim impact statements. And seemingly, Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell are just, they were in Hawaii on their honeymoon. What, 2 weeks after his former wife was murdered, Tammy. So 2 weeks. And then, just this whole religious craziness, it just puts it sort of caps this whole thing as is this evil or is this stupidity? Is this mental illness or is this just a diabolical criminal mind that has no ego, right? Missing the ego,
right?
Which is the conscience, has absolutely no conscience. What do you think, Professor Mike?
I think this is a narcissistic, selfish personality, a person who has no feelings for other people. What he wants he wants to get it no matter what. The idea that you would kill two innocent children, you know, and that you would kill your wife, and that you'd marry your girlfriend, your lover, be on vacation. That's a person who could kill anyone at any time for any reason, try to get away with it. He has a veneer of respectability, but because he's not, you know, prowling the streets at night looking to beat up an elderly woman, you know, that sort of thing. But that is a very, very thin veneer of civility. The idea that Miss Vallow would marry this guy, understanding what he was, you know, she's lucky in a way that she did not become a victim also. And who knows if, depending on what their lives turned out together, he may have seen her as a potential victim for money also. But
she was just as evil, if not more so, than him. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, they attracted each other.
Her hate to use a cliche, but birds of a feather flock together, you know, and that's absolutely. Let me go back to this for finish this up here.
The insurance fraud in regards to Tammy Daybell. I do want to give one more picture here for anyone who may not be too familiar with this case. Once again, we are following the fact that Chad Daybell, who you see on your screen right now, and Lori Vallow, also part of this entire scheme, Lori's two children here on your screen, were killed back in 2020. Their bodies were found in the backyard of the Daybell household. And now 4 years later, the jury has convicted Chad Daybell and sentenced him to death. Daybell and his then mistress, Lori Vallow, who we saw previously there, and Justin really detailed in his reporter package, they caused a wake of destruction that began years earlier. The couple apparently fascinated by this whole idea of a doomsday and also were obsessed with these doomsday fiction books. Lori Vallow, convicted of murder in 2023 in Idaho and sentenced to life in prison without parole. She is currently being held in a prison in Arizona, awaiting a trial based on the death of her fourth husband, Charles Vallow. And hundreds of people were tangled in the web created by both Vallow and Daybell. And of course, we're going to keep on with our reporting here and in conjunction with Fox 10 over in Phoenix, because Lori and her family, they previously did reside in Arizona, and that's why they have been covering this in an extensive capacity. We're going to step away for our first break of the hour here at Live Now from Fox, but we wanted to get a full breakdown on this breaking news that we got earlier today. We'll see you back here on the
Of course, that was yesterday, and right. it's already been decided. He has been sentenced to the death penalty for the three murders of one of his ex-wife and one of Joshua Vallow and the other one of Tylee Ryan. J.J. Vallow was considered, well, he was 7 years old, and Tylee Ryan was 16. So just think of, like, these evil people took the lives of two children, really, two children. And, you know, it somewhat reminds me also of, you know, Murdoch down in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Similar narcissistic personality, only thinks of me, you know, doesn't have a conscience. Maybe that Freudian concept of not having an ego that supplies you with a conscience. Maybe that's them. Maybe they do not have a conscience. Can they decipher right from wrong? Mike.
Yeah, Billy, he knows right from wrong. You're being generous to him. You're right. He does not have a conscience. He does not care. A person without a conscience only wants things, wants to accomplish things. And if they can get it, great. If somebody's in their way, they'll do whatever they have to do to hurt them. Absolutely. He does not care about the abuse that he would instill heap upon someone, hurting them, killing them. He would not care. People are transactional. His relationships are not deep. They're very, very, very much on the surface, because underneath there's nothing but, well, if that person doesn't give me what I want, you know, I'm going to eliminate them. I don't want them in my life. They're a waste. I'm not going to waste my time on them. Everything is to feed the ego, and there's no reciprocity in that relationship. He will give back, but only give back, not of the kindness of his heart, because he doesn't have one, only to get something further. It's all a transaction, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, to get what he wants. But it's just amazing when you look at this from that excellent reporting, how many people have been hurt, how many families have been damaged, how many communities have been upset by the loss of peace and tranquility in their communities caused by these two very sick, narcissistic people who unfortunately found themselves together, and they did so much damage. It's just amazing how much damage one person or two people acting in concert can accomplish. And it takes the justice system years to try to, you know, figure out and, you know, come up with a way to engage in some sort of justice for these people. But it's amazing how evil people can be when they put their minds to it.
100%. Melanie Smith from the chat. Tammy wasn't his ex-wife. She was his current wife. You're right. She was his current wife. And then he killed her. So I was sort of in that vein speaking about her in the past tense. But you're absolutely right. B. Moore. Lori was everything Chad always wanted. His sex goddess and cash cow all in one. He felt Tammy was boring. Tammy Donaldson, I live in Mesa, Arizona. We don't want Lori here. Well, you're not going to see her. She will be in a prison. So even though she's there. Mary Howard at Donna Shannon. In my humble opinion, Pryor is as bad as Daybell. He talked down to witnesses and the jury. Remember his statement, I'm going to give you a history lesson. Sherry Murray. Stone Loken, you can tell his attorney wants nothing to do with this anymore. I mean, he took this case on and now he has to deal with it, shaking my head. Yeah, I mean, you know, these cases, especially these death penalty cases, these attorneys, unless you're a death penalty attorney that deals with it all the time, it could be a case that you're going to be involved in for the next 20 years. And I don't know if anyone actually wants that, you know. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, Billy, it's a specialty. It's a niche defense, subset of defense attorneys doing that. They're excellent at it because the ones that do it all the time. They know what to expect. And like you say, this is going to be a two-decade-long case from the time you start to the time you finished. Someone in the chat was asking about why his defense attorney did not really present anything at the penalty stage. And I think that the idea that putting him on that the defense attorney putting Chad on the stand and trying to get a little sympathy, you know, out of him, maybe a tear, a little bit of emotion, so that they could see him, so the jurors could see him as a human being. I think probably that defense attorney probably thought it was like getting blood from a stone. You can't do it. This guy is such a stone-cold, narcissistic beast that he probably would have made it even easier for the jury to decide on the death penalty. So I think really the defense attorney did as much as he could, but he has to work with something. And you got a guy like Chad Daybell who's got no emotion, no character, no appeal, no sympathy at all, oozes from him. None. I think it was actually, strangely, I think the defense attorney was actually trying to mitigate the damage that could be done if he had put Daybell on the stand, because I'm sure the guy is like a machine. I'm sure he's emotionless. I'm sure people would just be turned off by him even more so than they were from the revelations during the trial.
Absolutely. But,
death penalty cases are difficult. Very few defense attorneys want to do it. These are really tough cases because they last forever.
They're going to be stuck with it forever. Let me just go to a quick, folks, this is Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, then you're in the right place. And if you're not subscribed to us, go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, ring that bell, hit the like button, share us with your friends and your family. If you want to contribute to us, we have a Patreon with four different levels. And we also have a YouTube channel membership with count them five different levels. And we appreciate all of our fans, our friends who really make this podcast what we consider to be an excellent podcast, make it that much better because we have such great subscribers and friends in our chat at all times. You know, there was what we're seeing a lot now, of course, in these death penalty cases and just even these murder cases is victim impact statements. And that was no exception here. And I'm going to play a couple of them from yesterday.
Versus Chad Daybell. I'm senior reporter Don Nelson outside the Ada County Courthouse in downtown Boise. An emotional day in court today as the victim impact statements were read.
Today is an incredibly difficult and bittersweet day.
Kay Woodcock, J.J. Vallow's grandmother, spoke. Kay and her husband, Larry Woodcock, have been a fixture at both Lori Vallow's trial and here at Chad Daybell's. Kay wondered what J.J. could have been.
I can't express just how much I wish I could have more time to create memories with him and with Charles. There's a hole in my heart, in the hearts of every member of my family, that can never be filled and will remain for the rest of my life.
Then Tammy Daybell's brother, Matthew Douglas, said Tammy was the emotional heart and glue of their siblings group. Soon after dealing with the loss of his sister, this happened.
Something new came along and ripped it open. Hearing from your siblings that your brother-in-law has remarried and kept it from your family weeks after the fact. That's painful. Missing kids? Wait, there were kids? Now my brother-in-law and his new bride have fled from Idaho to Hawaii for what?
Annie Cushing is Tylee Ryan's aunt and spoke of Tylee's love of life. She was crushed when she heard they discovered the bodies on Chad's property.
If someone had told me in 2002, that in 20 years' time, Joe and Tylee would both be dead, and I'd be swept up in a criminal case around Tylee's murder, I wouldn't have believed it. Tylee had her whole life ahead of her. She had dignity, she had dreams, she had goals. This defendant stole all of that.
Tammy's sister, Samantha Gwilliam, says she knew something was wrong when she found out about Chad's marriage to Lori.
I am asked about a pet cemetery, and a few days later, I watch with the world as the bodies of two precious missing children are found on the same property where my sister died. I wretched and sobbed over learning about JJ and Tylee, two more victims, and no peace to be found for anyone.
Chad was given the opportunity to say something, but he declined. Reporting outside the Ada County Courthouse in downtown Boise, I'm senior reporter Don Nelson.
So, you know, we expect in a case like this, what's called an allocution, where the defendant, once found guilty, will either confess to all of their crimes because they want to try to avoid the death penalty. But Chad Daybell didn't do that. He wasn't looking upon the mercy of the court, and he chose to remain silent. Mike.
Yeah, Billy, probably that was his doing. And like I say, he probably didn't give much. It was not much for the defense attorney to work with there. He's a very uninspiring defendant, doesn't inspire any sort of love or warmth. And, he probably felt that they wouldn't understand him. You know, looking at it from his point of view, he probably felt that his view of the world is so different from the jurors that they wouldn't understand what he would have to say. And, you know, he may have told the defense attorney, look, I don't even want to be a part of this. Don't put me up there. I don't want to do it. And the attorney said, okay, that's your wishes. And of course, that's always the defendant's wish. But, yeah, he had nothing to offer, and I think that would have been, if he had tried to eke out a tear, it would have been a crocodile tear. Is that the proper term? You know, people wouldn't have believed him, and, you know, to say, you know, extenuating circumstances, religious, you know, and out of intensity of religious feelings or something, he could say it, but I don't think he could really, you know, put forth any sort of human emotions that really could even have the jury even convinced a little bit, maybe one or two jurors out of 12, even convince one or two that maybe his life is worth saving. And so he made it easy on them. And therefore, the jury did what they had to do and what they thought was right. And you know, I'm not going to second guess them on that. And maybe it's good that he didn't allocute, because it would have come across as really, you know, insincere, you know?
Well, yeah, yeah. I think it's just as insincere not to say anything, you know, because people want to hear, like, if you want to be spared the death penalty, perhaps show a little remorse, show that you have a brain, show that you have some human emotion. Instead, he sits there with that same dumb smirk on his face, you know? And how could anyone sympathize with this guy? Same dumb smirk, different picture, right? All these pictures of him, he has that same dumb look on his face. Here we go. There's his booking photo.
That's a great photo.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, you know, that's the emotion. That's it. That expression is what's going on in his pea brain, you know? That smirk on his face. And this picture is baffling to me. 2 weeks after his wife was, what we now know, murdered, Tammy, he's on his honeymoon with Lori Vallow in Hawaii. There he is playing his little ukulele, you know. I got some beans, alligators, and warm neck geese. You know, I don't know what he was singing, but he's in Hawaii playing a ukulele with Lays around his head, and they look like they couldn't have a care in the world. That's a disturbing photo when you think of the background of what they went to Hawaii when all of this turmoil was going on at home.
Yeah, Billy, it's like they're living in their own little capsule, convincing each other that everything is good, that everything is fine, that the sun is going to come out tomorrow. And, you know, their lives are going to be better. You know, that's the scary thing, is that they could convince themselves of this. So that just shows you how out of touch and demented and also evil she is. So you got two people going to Hawaii. And I'm wondering if, you know, would you sleep with one eye open, knowing what each one is capable of doing? It seems really, really like something out of a crime fiction. But fiction is always based partly on reality, because crime writers cannot make this stuff up. This is where they get their ideas from, this insanity that these two people engaged in.
Well, Mike, she's like a black widow, you know.
Yeah.
He was her fourth husband. I mean, her last husband, I think, was murdered by her brother in allegedly an act of self-defense. Mm-hmm. Like, she's a scary person. So here you have two scary people, right? Two that actually, when you think about it, deserve each other. You know, here they are on screen. These two absolutely deserve each other. In a different world, there's no way one of them, if they were allowed to, if they had lived together, been married together for several years, wouldn't have killed the other. I'm convinced that would have happened. One of them. Yeah. These diabolical people would have killed the other. She's probably even more evil than him. You know, here and again, tiptoeing through the sand in Hawaii with the ukulele, you know, just, you know, when you, a horrific photo, when you think of what was going on in their life, you know, just absolutely, absolutely horrific. You know, and that's the only, suit she looks good in, the prison jumpsuit with the orange and white striped, just a crazy situation. Let me go to the chat for a second. Okay. Kevin Callahan, she's up in court in Arizona next, Bill, for that murder. Ray Grinstead, I think she killed Joe Ryan. You know, there's a distinct possibility of that. Helen the Scottish Llama, fifth husband, third was Joe Ryan, fourth was Charles Vallow. Okay, fifth husband. I missed one. When you have five husbands, sometimes it's easy to miss one, you know? Sorry. Brooklyn Janet and Chad's adult children testified on behalf of their father, Chad, and threw their mother under the bus. They did not come and express victim impact statements to support their father. Anna Lizette, can't we hear Lacey Peterson's mom saying something like, divorce was an option. Yeah, I guess. Pessa, I sometimes wonder if Emma is on the spectrum. You know, this is when you have a bizarre case like this, with it comes bizarre characters, you know, and these people were absolutely quite bizarre in this case. Let me play a little bit of Channel 12 news here.
Now to another big national case, Chad Daybell's triple murder trial. The jury reaching their verdict just a few hours ago, guilty on all counts. The so-called doomsday author is now convicted of murdering his wife, Lori Vallow's two kids, Tylee and JJ, who used to live right here in the Valley. He's also convicted for killing his first wife, Tammy Daybell. 12 News journalist Erica Stapleton has been on this case for the past 4 years. Erica, this verdict came down quickly.
Yeah, Tram, the jury got the case just yesterday afternoon, so they had it for less than 24 hours. And what this means is that prosecutors really laid out their case clearly, and the jury was able to use that evidence to come to their decision. To give you some background, this trial took some time, 31 days of testimony and arguments over the course of the past 2 months, each side pulling out all the stops in their cases, the state driving home their case that this was about money, power, and sex, and that Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow's dark religious beliefs led them to have an affair and get rid of anyone who could get in the way of their relationship. The defense actually calling Chad a victim, blaming the crimes on Lori Vallow and her brother. But in the end, the jury was quick to convict on 8 charges, including those 3 counts of first-degree murder.
In regards to count 2 of the amended indictment, is Chad Guy Daybell not guilty or guilty of first-degree murder of Tylee Ryan? Guilty. In regards to count 4 of the amended indictment, is Chad Guy Daybell not guilty or guilty of first-degree murder of Joshua Jackson Vallow? Guilty. Question number 6. In regards to count 6 of the amended indictment, is Chad Guy Daybell not guilty or guilty of first-degree murder of Tamara Tammy Daybell? Guilty.
Let's take another legal deep dive and bring Hector back into the conversation. Hector, we are talking less than 24 hours for this verdict to come down. Were you surprised at how fast this came in and guilty?
No, not surprised. You know, the prosecutors in this case had a trial involving Lori Vallow. And so they had a really good appreciation of the evidence. Mm-hmm. They, I think, also likely made adjustments in terms of what was going to be impactful here to connect Chad Daybell to this crime, mm-hmm. recognizing that he was likely going to try to lay the blame on, you know, his co-conspirator.
Right.
And so there was just a lot of evidence that connected Chad Daybell to beyond just simply that somehow he was a patsy or went along with this. So it's just, it's interesting, that this has come to a conclusion.
Mm-hmm. And Tram, I'll say I wasn't surprised either. I was maybe surprised more at how quickly they came to that verdict, but I wasn't surprised that it was guilty on all counts, just because, again, as Hector said, they had, you know, this blueprint looking at Lori Vallow's case. She was convicted in this case on all counts last year. And some of the evidence that was presented, there are images, there were details about a lot of disturbing details that really stick with you as a juror. So I'm sure they considered all of that during their deliberations, and it was just a lot of evidence that stacked up.
And usually, you know, when a verdict comes down this fast, I mean, usually, is it guilty?
Well, it's usually in those situations, I'll tell you, I've been doing this long enough to where I try not to read the tea leaves.
Right.
But there is always sometimes on the defense side that's going to be a not guilty. So maybe his lawyers thought, you know, there was some issue there. You know, did they go back and look at the evidence? And you know, but there's the other side of it. Sometimes they come back, right, they've heard the evidence and it's guilty.
Yeah.
It just depends on the kind of case. And here, I think there was so much evidence here that connected, you know, this individual to acting beyond just simply, you know, that he was going along somehow and, you know, didn't have any involvement,
right,
beyond, you know, being with Miss Vallow. Mm-hmm. That just didn't fly.
What was interesting to Erica and I, you know, his demeanor, how stoic, how emotionless he was throughout the trial.
And keep in mind,
you know, Mike, I want to, mm-hmm. We mentioned that also he's stoic, he's emotionless. Is that a product of, again, having no conscience, or is that a product of being a little bit mentally ill, or is it a product of both?
Yeah, Billy, I don't think it has anything to do with, I'm a cop, not a psychologist. So when you're on the street, you know, you remember what you thought a mentally ill person was or wasn't. He has plenty of understanding of right and wrong. He has plenty of understanding of the consequences of his actions. And he understands that people suffer the consequences of their actions. His stoicism may have been, I think, partly due to the fact that maybe he does think that he's more intelligent, smarter, more understanding of the universe than other people who are just living their common people, living their everyday lives. Maybe it has to do with his narcissism. And again, that's speaking from a cop's perspective. I'm sure a psychologist would have a different one. But I think that he's all of his affect, that outward veneer of civility, that affect that seems very emotionless, I think has to do with his inability to, on some ways, really communicate or show emotion because he's not feeling anything. He's not feeling sadness. He's not feeling fear. He's not feeling, guilt, remorsefulness. He's not. You and I would be sweating. We'd be shaking. You know, we'd be not able to speak. Here he is.
Yeah, but Mike, you know something? In the NYPD, we had a meter to determine whether someone was guilty or not. If someone arrested, okay, went into the cells and they went right to sleep, they were guilty as hell. That was the meter we used to say, because a normal person being arrested could not go into the cells and fall asleep because they would be so upset. They would be all stressed out. But a person that's guilty doesn't care because they've been through it so many times and they go right to sleep. And I'm not saying that's scientifically proven. It's not at all. But cops, we used to say that if someone goes into the cell and goes right to sleep, they're guilty.
Good. That's a good meter to judge.
Yeah, I mean, I know you've heard it before. That's not the first time you heard it. Barbara, RN54 from the chat. He's arrogant, still thinks he's right, probably still thinks he should have right? Murdered. Barbara RN, I guess you're a nurse. We need more nurses. Love nurses. What a great job. What great people. Such a tough job, too.
No, it is.
Pessa, I bet Chad thought the world was flat. Wow. Yeah, I mean, this guy is missing quite a few brain cells, in my opinion. Dub, if he's so smart, maybe he can figure out how to have fun in his jail cell. Well, I don't think it's going to be fun. Kung Fu Panda, some evil people do anything to get a Black Widow trophy. Chad proves that. Yeah, she was, and she absolutely was or is a Black Widow. That's, mm-hmm, of course, Lori Vallow, you know. And she may disarm some people with her pretty face and her manipulative ways, but this is where she wound up on a poster, you know, on a having her official police department photo taken, you know, so, and life in prison, of course, she wound up with. Let me go back to this.
He never testified. We haven't heard much from him on any of this. So to see him sitting there, even through the verdict being read.
I mean, is that something, I'm just wondering, as a criminal defense attorney, is that something that you would tell your client or discourage?
You know, I try to tell my clients when you're waiting there, it's a very stressful when you're waiting for a verdict and, you know, you're hoping for that not guilty based on, you know, the evidence, and you're sitting there and the jury comes in and, mm-hmm, you never know how a defendant's going to act. You tell them, hey, listen, let's show respect to the court, to the jurors that are going to come in. Don't, you know, if it's doesn't go our way,
right,
you know, we want to be, you know, to maintain our composure.
Okay.
And so that may have been some of the instruction. Who knows? This person could be medicated for all we know, yeah, in terms of, you know, he is incarcerated and there are a lot of things going on. But yeah.
You know, that would explain, the medication would explain this dopey face, but, but it's just like, it seems like this expression is frozen on his face. Every picture you see, he has that dopey little expression. It's almost like a sneer, you know, here's another photo. It's just his lip is lower on one side than the other. It's almost like a permanent frown. Look at that. Look at that. He can't even help it. You know, I wonder what he did when he was a kid, when his family had a photographer come over to take family photos. You know, I would bet he had that same look on his face, but it doesn't do well for the jury, for the judge, when you have this look on that you don't give a shit about anything, you know?
Yeah.
And you could care less that you're being charged with three first degree murders of these innocent people, Tammy Daybell, his wife, Joshua J.J. Vallo, and Tylee Ryan. Just, you know, unbelievable. And yet the guy sits in court as if, oh, me? You think you're saying I did that? You know, like, yes, dude, we're saying you did that.
I do want to add quickly, Hector and Tram, that this isn't over just yet. We're now moving into the sentencing phase of this case. Chad Daybell could be facing the death penalty here in the same jury that just convicted him.
Well, we know that he did. This was before the death penalty came out. We know, in fact, he did get sentenced to the death penalty.
Him on all counts will be deciding if the death penalty is just on those murder and conspiracy charges. So I'm wondering if the speed in which they convicted him here might have any bearing on a decision.
Always plays into it
for
it
the death penalty.
Into it. It also, to your point, in terms of how he acted, that was in front of that same jury that's mm-hmm. going to decide his fate. They are going to sit and weigh aggravating, mitigating factors. Now it becomes a mini trial, mm-hmm. and they're going to hear from other witnesses in terms of Chad Daybell's actions. There's going to be evidence that didn't come in during the trial about his character, and they're going to have to decide. They only have to find one aggravator in terms of whether to impose the death penalty, and that could be, for instance, the nature of this crime, that it was cruel and depraved. Mm-hmm. It, you know, was there some kind of financial motive, you know, backing this? We heard about some insurance issues there. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I wouldn't be surprised, given the facts that we know about this case.
Well, we know how it played out. He got the death. He got
pretty
death
quickly.
Penalty. And they don't have to, obviously, this was from yesterday before that came down. Some interesting comments in the chat. Anna Lizette, someone from Idaho in another chat, said Chad still has a lot of followers. God forbid.
Right.
It reminds me of that dirtbag from Myrtle Beach, that John Paul Miller, the pastor, and how he drove his wife, stalked his wife, drove her to commit suicide. And I question, when we covered that case, Micah Miller, how anyone could go to that guy's church ever again. That guy has showed, and not to segue to that other case, but I'm baffled. And in this case, Anna Lizette, how could anyone follow Chad Daybell or his church anymore? That's really like lemmings jumping off a cliff, you know? Mike.
Yeah, it's scary that people would follow someone like Micah Miller's husband, knowing full well. If you thought he was charismatic before all this broke, fine. That's your choice. You know, that's your belief. And maybe he had some sort of attraction as a great preacher. I don't know. But after finding out all that had gone on, all that he even talked about on the altar, how anyone would continue to follow him is beyond me, knowing the fact that he was not a loving person, that he was abusive towards his wife, that he was a stalker. When I saw that video of him stalking his wife, and I think she pulled off into a gas station or something, and he was over there, I thought of every single perp husband I saw in the Bronx or Manhattan, and the attitude. And it was a perp attitude, perp walk, perp mentality. How could anybody follow that character after that, knowing that? You know, I don't understand it. Go ahead, do it. It's your choice.
And Mike, you're talking about John Paul Miller right now.
Right, yeah, and then you go to this guy here.
Right.
You know,
and this guy's even worse. But
right.
The fact that people will still follow them in their church, right. Again, I compare him to lemmings jumping off a cliff. You know, are you kidding me? You're going to follow this guy? Still? You're going to follow him? He just got convicted of three counts of murder, first degree.
Do you really think he's innocent?
Yeah, it's crazy. Barbara Miller. From the chat, Barbara, mental illness does not mean you are insane. Barbara, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. But you're right, because, first of all, if someone was going to claim an insanity plea, they almost have to prove that they didn't understand right from wrong. And I never raised that issue. I just think, these people are mentally ill. You're right. Both of them were mentally ill. Barbara, you're completely right. But completely aware of what they were doing, either didn't care, felt justified. You know, Barbara, I wonder, how many people out there that go about their life every single day seemingly normal people would be diagnosed with one or more mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. And I think most people probably have some type of, let's call it a phobia, and something like that. You know, I don't think anyone is 100% what we would say normal, right? Mental illness gets way more overlooked than a physical illness, Mike.
Yeah, Billy, you know, if you took everyone and gave everyone a psychiatric examination, Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, the MMPI, that's the one we took to get on the NYPD. You draw pictures, you answer questions.
You passed that one, Mike?
I passed it. I mean, I studied really hard for that one. But, you know, if you did this sort of thing, you gave every adult in America, you probably would find a lot of disturbing things in people. But everyone, no matter how healthy you are physically or how mentally healthy you are, everyone's dealing with a little phobia, a little fear or something. I don't like heights. I don't enjoy flying. I do it, but I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy going up into tall buildings and elevators. There's just certain things you don't enjoy. You stay away from, you know, and that's for everybody. Everybody's got their thing.
You can't scale tall buildings at a single bound?
Hell no. Hell no.
And but, who disguised as Michael Geary?
You know, but other things I don't mind doing that other people might be in fear of. So, yeah, we all have our little phobias, our little fears, our little things that go on. But and they may be considered like a perhaps part of a mental illness. But that doesn't mean that we can't be we're not prepared and normal enough to go about our everyday lives and know right from wrong and do all these things, you know. But yeah, and there's no one out there that's 100% perfectly normal across the spectrum, mentally, physically, emotionally. No, that human does not exist.
Absolutely. You know, Mike, you brought back memories of the of that test that we took for the NYPD, and mm-hmm. people would give you hints, like they said for you to draw a house. You know? And you would say, well, what do you mean? What do you want me to do? And then people would tell you, make sure there's smoke coming out of the chimney.
Yes,
because
and windows.
That shows like a happy home. Make sure there's lots of windows because it shows that you're not hiding. I mean, I don't know if these were correct or not.
No,
but
it's true. And
some
trees.
People, you know, obviously didn't get that advice and they would fail the psychological mm-hmm. test based upon the drawing they made. You know, who is this guy in the yard killing someone with an axe? We didn't ask you to do that, right?
Right.
There was a sign that guy's probably not suited for police work if he drew
a guy. Don't give him
a
gun.
No. So, but I mean, there was so many. I would have loved to have been in the psych services to see some of those pictures that the candidates for the NYPD drew.
Disturbing.
Because some people absolutely got disqualified because of their drawings. Anna Lissette. I am a journalist in Idaho, but I decided early on that I did not want to write about this case because cult was part of it. You know, Anna Lissette, we're seeing that cult type behavior in a lot of places. Tiffany Adams, mm-hmm. Cole Twombly, Cora Twombly, right. And Cullum, Tad Cullum, and Paul Grice. They were part of God's Misfits. And they killed the two Kansas moms. Was that a cult or was that, you know, God's Misfits? What was that? Is that what drove them to assist a 53-year-old woman in the dispute she was having with her grandchildren's mother? They assisted her. Now they're going to spend the rest of their life in prison if they get convicted. You know, so yeah, cult behavior, cult-like behavior. Absolutely. As I said, we're seeing this all over the world now. Miss Holmes, the kids were missing for about 9 months before found. Dub, anyone who followed this guy is mentally weak. You know something, yes. Dub? A lot of religions, people follow these false prophets. You know, to me, when I see a pastor, a religious leader that is worth megabucks, you know, one guy... And I won't say his name. He's worth $110 million. Right there, to me, that says shyster. It says a guy who's in religion for a business, and he's taking poor people's money to enrich himself. So all of these things are like crazy, but people flock to these charismatic speakers you know, if you're a good speaker and you can really, you're almost like a used car salesman, some of these preachers, you know, that's what we would compare. I used to call it on the NYPD when someone had a good line of shit, we used to say. He's like a used car salesman, this guy, you know. He should be really selling cars. He shouldn't be a cop. Same thing with a lot of these preachers. They're just like used car salesmen, Mike.
Yeah, Billy, people always think when you think of organized religions, you know, a vow of, you know, poverty, chastity or something like that. But it's always that public service that to the people and the flock. You're the shepherd guiding your flock, whether it's you're a Methodist, you know, Episcopalian, or whatever, Catholic, whatever it happens to be. You know, you always have that feeling like there's a little bit of the ideal that you are supposed to give all that you have, and that whatever, you know, if you've got, you know, 10 cents in your pocket, you got to give someone a nickel. You know, you got to do that because that's part of your giving, that you don't keep anything for yourself. You're really there to serve the flock. And if someone is worth, a preacher's worth $110 million, why isn't there 55 million of it given to, you know, help people who are homeless in the community, help people who are overcoming addiction? Lord knows we have a lot of people addicted to narcotics and alcohol. That destroys families and people in dire need of mental help. Could we give a little to them? Yeah, that's a real warning sign that person, to me, is a shyster. Absolutely.
Jacqueline Ha, good to see you. Chad was a religious radical. He was a cult leader. Yeah, we're just sort of expounding upon that now and our feelings toward people that are sort of these religious con men. I'll put it that way, you know. We call them used car salespersons or men, you know. And Dub from the chat, Chad was a ripoff artist posing as a Christian. He got away with knowing he was ripping people off for years, probably. When that happens, your brain gets numbed to wrongdoing. Dub, I don't disagree with you. And that's sort of the theme we're putting out there right now. Evelyn G. Evelyn, are inmates on death penalty not kept isolated? This could be the best option for him. If Evelyn G, I believe he would be kept isolated in his cell for X amount because they don't want people on death row really to have interactions with other prisoners. So, and they're also always afraid that someone in the prison will kill the person. So that's another reason they're locked down. Rex Uerman, the Gilgo Beach alleged serial killer who's in Suffolk County Jail right now, when they have to move him, they lock down the entire jail. So no one could possibly get to them because they're locked in this cell. So if they have to move Rex Uerman from his cell to the library, they have to lock the whole jail down, move him, and then they can reopen the jail. And somehow he's protected and no one else is allowed in the library when he is. Same thing. I'm not going to go over every place they could possibly have to move him. But just suffice it to say that when Rex Uerman has to be moved, they lock the jail down. And the same thing would be for Chad Daybell. I think they're actually in their cells 23 out of 24 hours, Mike.
Yeah, Billy, they're not very popular, especially anyone who's on death row and or in general population who has hurt a child. You know, the gangbangers, the assassins in there, you know, they respect force, they respect strength, but you don't rape a woman, you don't kill a granny, you don't kill a little child. Even they have standards. And this guy probably would have, if he was in general population, within a month he'd be dead. They'd have a contract out on him for like say $100 or a carton of cigarettes, because that's about all his life would be worth. The safest place for him would be locked in his cell 23 hours a day and be served food there. Maybe he gets a little rec time in a small little fenced in area by himself, but that's about it. And that's the best place for him. That's the safest place for him. Because he wouldn't last. And it may be mind numbing to anyone, and especially to him who maybe has led some sort of flock of people to be just sitting there locked down 23 hours a day. But considering what he did to get there, I think it's a small price to pay.
Absolutely. Carson C., I lost my husband in 2002. Then I started having panic. I'm better now. Carson C., I'm glad you're better now. And thank you for sharing that with us. And I'm sorry that you lost your husband. Helen, the Scottish Lama, cults prey on the vulnerable. And Helen, the Scottish Lama, and doesn't religion also do that? I'm not saying every religion does it, but many religions prey upon, specifically the ones that are all about money, they prey upon the vulnerable. They preach to you, the more money you give, the more the Lord will bless you. So as the Lord's blessing you, I am getting rich and driving a Mercedes, you know, but the Lord will bless you for me driving the Mercedes. It's so ludicrous and ridiculous that people fall for that nonsense. But again, I think, like, as you said, cults prey upon the vulnerable. So does religion. So does a lot of religion prey upon the vulnerable. Mike.
Yeah, Billy, just think about it. Cults are, in some ways, you know, they're conspiracies. We saw that with in this case, and we've seen it in other cases where you get a group like God's misfits, you know, mankind's misfits, whatever you want to call them. You know, they talk about, you know, a religious bent, but they have political ideology that they're infusing people, you know, preaching to people. So they may want to put that little bit of religion on it to give them maybe perhaps a little legitimacy. Oh, you know, they're not a cult. They're a religious group, a real strict religious group. But in some ways, they have characteristics of conspiracies, conspiracy to silence people, conspiracies to control people, conspiracies to, get into people's personal lives and to control their personal lives and to soak them for money. Yeah, cults are conspiracies in many ways. And if they do if they start to commit fraud, and that's not a very difficult thing to do when you're constantly asking people for money, they become a criminal conspiracy. Yeah. So cults and conspiracies are, you know, two sides of the same coin.
Absolutely. Pessa, Jody Hildebrandt, you couldn't have put a better person. You're right. Jody Hildebrandt, what I believe was trained in mind control. She knew how to control people. And you know, now she's, you know, facing what'd she get, like, six counts of sentences of 1 to 15, but we don't actually know what that means. She deserves life in prison, in my opinion, Jody Hildebrandt. Just absolutely crazy. Jacqueline Ha, Chad didn't sound charismatic at all. He's monotone and weird, but people in his religion loved his writing and books. So weird, in my opinion. You know, Jacqueline, it's like that old expression, different strokes for different folks. And yeah, many people follow this guy, perhaps, like, you're correct, because of his writing and his books. Because if you look at the guy, I mean, I wouldn't follow that guy into a gas station, you know? And it's like, but people are taken in by people that are manipulative, people that know how to control people. People, you know, control is also, you see politicians using control, and it's based on lies. They're skilled liars, you know? That's probably the best analogy I could make. Some of these cult leaders, some of these religious leaders, of course, all politicians, they control people through lies. And that, if anyone doubts that, just go watch the news, go watch Congress, go watch the Senate, and tell me if they're not, every other word out of their mouth or every third sentence is not a lie or spin. That's the word they use for lies in our culture. They spin it a certain way. Wait, whoa. You don't spin words. You tell the truth or you lie. You mean he's lying, if you're saying, but that's the euphemism for it. Oh, he spun it this way, you know?
Yeah, people who are good bullshitters, people who are trying to sell you something, you know, they study people's reactions. They look at know your target audience, know them well. You know, you were on the street, I was on the street, you know, and you're talking to people, and you could sometimes know what they're going to do, or you could predict what they're thinking as you're talking to them, because you can see their physiological reactions. And so therefore, you know, someone who's a narcissist like Daybell here, he could sit there and he's going to, no matter what you say, you could write a book and say something really strange, you will always get at least one or two people who are going to love it. you know, and maybe 99% of the people won't. But you don't worry about those 99%. You just want to get a small group of people who will follow you. We've seen this with all kinds of different groups. Look, remember from way back, Charles Manson. This little guy, he's 5'2". He looks like a filthy little hippie, yet he got people to kill for him. You know, you had that years ago, the Hale Bopp Comet group, really, really super bright people who all committed collective suicide because they thought the world would end. You know, some one of them told it. You look at Jonestown, Jim Jones, that he was trying to get everyone to drink the Kool-Aid. Not everyone did, and it was a mass murder suicide. You know, you get these people who get, they don't have to get a lot of people, just a corpus enough to keep them going. And the longer the people stay in the cult, the more deeply entrenched they get, and they can't get out. We see this in today, you know, every day. So this is a very dangerous thing. I think a lot of people want to be led. They want to be given the answers to life. And those are the most vulnerable, someone who's going to give them the answers that they want to hear. And they will then follow that person, give up their right to choose and their own autonomy. And they will follow this person and swear by this person's, veracity. So really scary. Yeah, there is a group of people out there who think Daybell is charismatic. Not the kind of word I would use to describe him. But unfortunately, there's enough people out there who thought he was.
Absolutely. And BB2 from the chat, Sergeant Bill, I can't remember his name, but he does a commercial about natural spring water and everything will come to you. You're automatically out of debt, blah, 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 blah. Oh, please. You know, and BB2, that reminded me. And every time I see this commercial, I cringe. And Tom Selleck, who I really like as an actor, he does a commercial about reverse mortgages. And I just cringe because the worst thing a human being could do is to do a reverse mortgage. If you need the money, sell your house and go rent a house. You know, don't go to a bank that's going to give you a reverse mortgage and rob you blind because the deal is not for the favor of the person that owns the home. It's for the bank. Trust me. And when I see Tom Selleck going, oh, you can get a reverse mortgage. You don't have money when you like, oh, please, Tom, you're telling old people to do exactly what they should be doing, you know?
Yeah, Billy, he's a very popular figure. He's now himself like probably in his 70s, I would imagine, late 70s. Very, very popular over the course of many years. And he's giving answers to people. He's giving peace, saying, this is how you do it. And unfortunately, a lot of people will jump on that only because of what personality traits they impute to Tom Selleck. I've never met the man. I don't have anything against him, but I don't know what he's like. I have no idea.
I think he's a great actor, but I think he sold out doing a commercial for reverse mortgages, and he happens to be a senior citizen himself.
Sure.
But absolutely. You're a multimillionaire senior citizen. You'll never have to do what you're telling other people to do.
That's
and
right.
A reverse mortgage is probably the worst thing. And, you know, if I'm wrong, folks in the chat, kill me now. I don't mean kill me. I mean, you know, but let me hear it, because I don't know anyone that's done a reverse mortgage, because again, you want better terms? Sell your damn house and go rent the house. Now you have all the money and you're just paying rent. And believe me, you'll live beyond that money, except if you do a reverse mortgage. Why do you need to give the bank, you know, say your house is worth $500,000. Why do you need to give the bank $200,000? That's probably what the terms are. That's probably about what they'll take. Why would you do that? But people, they're afraid, you know, maybe also ignorance. Many of us aren't, you know, economically savvy. Many of us don't have the skills to do a lot of these things. But who's ever listened, don't ever do a reverse mortgage.
Right. Talk to an accountant first. Talk to somebody so they can tell you how best to invest your money. Yeah, don't, you know, those things, the way he talks, he's got a great affect. He's perfect for the part. But he provides answers to people who might otherwise are in fear of actually trying to find out, scared that they wouldn't understand what to do with their future. But that charisma, that's deadly when it comes to being a good used car salesman.
Very deadly. Yeah, 100%. Evelyn Strand, there are individuals that are searching for something to fill the holes they have inside.
That's right.
They're desperate for acceptance and guidance, something to believe in. It saddens me. Evelyn, you're 100% right. And that goes for every place, any place in the world. It's the human condition, you know. Pauline Buckles from the chat, it's about power and control. Jacqueline Ha, Chad was Latter-day Saints. Wow. That we had, you know, again, we had that whole case before also, you know. Anna Lizette, my husband used the term BS artist. Yes, of course. Of course. We, you know, that was an expression on the NYPD. This guy's a used car salesman. And everyone understood that that's what that meant. You know, this guy's trying to tell us that that wall is green when it's actually yellow, you know, and he's proven that it's yellow. You know, it's proven that it's green, according to him. B. Moore. I'll say it. Joel Osteen is one of the biggest religious con. You know, B. Moore, I didn't want to say his name. I recently saw that he's worth $110 million. Right there, con man. I don't care what he's doing. He's helping Joel Osteen way more than he's helping people. A religious leader should not be worth $110 million. Just should not be. I'll say that right across the board, should not be worth $110 million. What are your feelings on that, Mike?
Yeah, Billy, if you're going to go into that line of business, you shouldn't be going into it to make $1 million. If you want to be a scientist, a doctor, cure cancer, you know, that sort of thing, and you're well compensated, yeah, I've got no problem with that. But I think when it comes to religion, you should be going into that for the intrinsic value that you give to people, not for monetary value. Giving people peace of mind, giving people peace in their lives, giving people a sense of self-reflection, and having people think about their lives, you know, every Sunday. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, to accumulate that much wealth, to me, you should be giving it back. You should be giving it back. You should be in charge of programs that help people with mental health issues, you know, homelessness, hunger, you know, things like that in the community. Because I'm sure in many communities that there where his church is located, his mega church, I'm sure there's people who are going hungry, maybe going without medicine, even just eyeglasses, proper shoes, people who need help with their everyday lives beyond just listening to him preach. I have difficulty with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. Mary Woodruff from the chat. Check out Dr. John Dalen's comments about how very related Chad Daybell beliefs are indeed related to the fundamental teachings of the LDS Mormon Church. Not enough people are talking about this. Yeah, you know something? Because people are afraid. People that live in those communities are afraid to speak out against the church because the influence of the church goes to the police, goes to the criminal justice system, goes to the community, the businesses around it, because the church has a stranglehold and they get away with doing egregious things because of that power and that stranglehold they have on the community. Mike?
Yeah, that's real power. That's power that's not a theoretical power. That's a tactical power. Tactile, you could feel it, therefore, people understand that you got to live in that community. So, you know, you may wish to say something, you may wish to point something out, you may wish to preach against it, you may wish to write something or to say something, but you, at the end of the day, you got to go back to that home in that community, and your family's there, and you could be affected by blowback. So, yeah, it's very difficult if you're outside that community. You can do it. You don't have any fear. But if you're in that community, I can understand people not willing to put themselves and especially their families' lives in danger. I can understand that 100%.
Fuzzy Doxy, Bill, is Chad Daybell considered a serial killer? You know, Fuzzy Doxy by the FBI definition, yes, he is. Mm-hmm. A serial killer is two or more with a break in between. So he killed his wife and then he killed these the two children. Yes, that makes him a serial killer by definition. I mean, we probably wouldn't think of him as such, but by definition, yes, he absolutely is. Aaron Kelly, I've seen more life in the deceased than I've seen in that getting his fate completely empty. Yes, Chad Daybell is, you know, is not a good human being, obviously. Anna Lizette, when the second coming doesn't happen on a certain date, the actual time gets recalculated and eventually new religions get born. Seventh-day Adventists, for instance. You know, the whole thing that we're questioning about that, and the reason we bring up Chad Daybell and some of these other preachers like John Paul Miller from the Myrtle Beach Church, that he was a really poor excuse for a religious man, for a pastor of a church, drove his wife to commit suicide, was stalking her. And the one thing, just to bring up John Miller one other time, is that she made 14 reports against him and he was never arrested. What does that tell you? That tells me that the church has influence out into the community, right into the police department. Mike.
Yeah, Billy, you know, this isn't, we're not talking about maybe the 1970s or the 1980s. And I remember how we handled family complaints back in the 4-6 years ago and how it changed like in the late 80s. I remember that. And we took them more seriously. And I think that's a change for the better. But so we're not talking about 1970s. We're talking about today. 14 complaints, and having 14 complaints, you know, not just like rumors, but actually 14 separate complaints, you think that there would be a detective at least assigned to go there and actually debrief and get a and do a follow-up. I'm not even sure if these might have been these reports might have been taken and closed out. Remember, you know, open or close. You leave it open for detective squad or you just close it at the patrol level. I'm wondering, I'd like to see those complaints and see when they who took them, when they took them, what the allegations were. And, you know, because it seemed from what I could tell, and I, you know, from the small snippet of information we could see, was that she was determined to press charges against this person. Because I know there are times where a person who may be harassed, assaulted, you know, things like that by their spouse may just want them to stop doing it and they'll call the police, but they really don't want the person arrested. They just want the actions to stop. But from what I know, she seemed pretty darn determined to actually have him stop and maybe to also to be arrested. I would like to find out what the heck happened with those reports. Yeah.
Yeah, I would too. Kung Fu Panda from the chat. Al-Anon meetings, churches, volunteering at nonprofits. These are places I met very frightening people. They look for people trying to better themselves or grieving. And, you know, Kung Fu Panda, I think, you know, it's a generalization, but I've seen a lot of truth to things like this because people that are looking for help are very vulnerable. And people that know how to attack vulnerable people, they're going to do it. They're going to take advantage of these very vulnerable people. And as you say, Al-Anon, churches, nonprofits, sometimes people just volunteer for something to do and they could be searching for something, a void in their life, and they're very vulnerable. And these professional con people, these professional used car salesmen, as we call them, are looking for someone that they can take advantage of. Mike? Mike, you there?
Yeah, people people need a lot of help in life. I'm here. You got me? Billy, you have
yeah, me? I got you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, people are looking for help, and there are sharks in the water. So, unfortunately, in every religion, in politics and religion, in all these groups that are supposed to be, you know, helping community, there may be a lot of really great people working for these not-for-profit corporations and things like that. But there's always somewhere in the mix there. There's always going to be someone who's a shark in the water looking for someone, looking for a meal. And unfortunately, people who are vulnerable and who actually need a hand are vulnerable to their machinations. It's really scary sometimes.
Absolutely. Sherry Murray from the chat. I felt the same way, Sarge. Didn't quite understand why Tom was doing that commercial. I thought I was the only one who felt that way, shaking my head. No, I think that, you know, reverse mortgages, I think, are predatory. I absolutely think they are a predatory form of lending, much like credit cards. Who gets the 21 and the 25% interest rates? The people that can least afford it, because they can't get a credit card, you know, for 3% or 6%. So they want credit, and right out of the box, 21%. That's like a loan shark. These credit card companies, really, they're banks. They should not be allowed to do that. I think that's outrageous. You know, okay, this person can't afford this credit card, but we're going to give it to him or her at 21%. And when they hit their limit in about 3 days of $3,000, they're going to pay for that for about 10 years. How diabolical is that? How wrong is that as a society that we allow banks to do that? Does anyone think that's horrific? I do. I think it's crazy, but that's what they do. And people that have their finances together or perhaps make a little more money, they have no debt. They have no debt. And maybe, and they could, people, all people could live way above their means by using credit. But if you use your head, you realize, wait, that's the stupidest possible thing I could do because I'm going to just be paying interest. So if you use your card, pay it. That, and look, and I'm being snobby a little bit. If you have enough money that you can do that, obviously, sometimes you don't even, you just use your credit card to pay for something. You pay it off at the end of the month. So I'm not trying to, because I came from a family with 8 kids and 2 adults. We lived in a tiny little house. I never had money my whole years growing up. So I'm not trying to be snobby or judge anyone. But I just think it's so wrong that these banks issue credit cards to people that they know can't afford it at 21% interest. Mike.
Billy, you know, it's really scary when you think about how high the interest rates are. You could probably get a better loan from a loan shark that's, you know, attached to an organized crime family, and you get better terms. They probably treat you more mercifully. It's terrible. And I remember even speaking about this to my wife. We were looking to, get a car, a lease a car. And depending on your credit score, if you have a low credit score, you get better terms, you know, for the lease on the car. And you're sitting there going, wow. So, I don't need it so much as somebody else. But that's amazing that the better off you are and you don't need the mercy of the credit card companies or the dealership, than a poor person who could, you know, maybe you could loan them that same amount of money that I would be looking at giving them 21%, maybe give them 10%, give me 12% or something like that, whatever it happens to be. But yeah, if you are poor and you need that credit card, you seriously need that credit card, you are very, very vulnerable to being ripped off. And it's predatory. It's illegal. It's all perfectly legal, but it is predatory lending because it. When you see some of these actors doing these reverse mortgages, they're sent to targeted audience, people over 65, you know, that age, who are retiring, and people worry about what their future is going to look like, and they provide an answer, and so people jump at it. And that is sad. I remember, you know, as a kid, and when I got my first credit card, and when I was like 21, I got my first credit card, and I bought something, and I paid the minimum amount of money. And the next month, I saw that the credit card, I looked at the credit card statement, and it was like, oh my God, it looked like I didn't pay off anything. My father said, oh, okay, what did you learn from that? And I was like, I learned that you have to pay this thing off really fast. So then I immediately paid it off. But it was a good lesson. At age 21 to say, wow, this is something you got to be really, really on top of. You have to be really careful because the credit card companies are predatory sharks. That's all they are.
Grasshopper, what you learn from that? I learned not to trust banks, grandfather.
That's right. I learned my lesson.
Yeah. Jacqueline Ha from the chat. Bill, the wild thing is that Chad was not an actual LDS leader. I'm not sure what the title is, elder or bishop. He just started to have a small group of friends, people who followed him. Yeah, people follow it's in the Bible, false prophets, right? What's the expression? And again, I'm not a religious man. I know a few quotes from the Bible. I think Jesus Christ said, "I am the Lord thy God. I shall have no false prophets before me," right? I don't know if I quoted it exactly, but I was Catholic once. I mean, I'm still Catholic. I'm not a practicing Catholic, but I remember my teachings as a kid, and I don't believe many. I'm not going to get into it, but just you know, religions can control your life a little bit, I think, and you got to be very careful, even no matter what your religion is. I want to play a little bit more, Mike, to close it out with some more impact statements from the family here.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, it's me, Aunt Vicky. Thank you so much for all of your wonderful coverage. My fear in all of this to begin with was that Tammy would be a little bit forgotten because, as we all know, finding two children brutally murdered in somebody's yard that you'd know and love is devastating, but finding out that Tammy was a victim as well. And I just, you know, with all due respect to the kids, I couldn't imagine her being a little bit lost in the mix. So it was important for me as her aunt to be here. Her mom passed last year, and those were the last years of her life, knowing that her daughter had been murdered. So today is a sweet justice for us, for myself and my immediate family. It's hard to express. I was just talking to Larry and we were talking about, there's a little bit of sadness in us now because we've built a family together here, supporting our families. We love each other like family. Our relationship will never end. But we got justice for our loved ones, and that was always what this was about, getting justice for them. This wasn't about us. It wasn't about anything other than getting justice for those that we love. And the prosecution, the detectives, I can't say enough about them. I feel like they got a gift from those detectives. They worked so hard. They didn't count their hours. They were incredibly important to the effort that went on here. And I think that they gave it up to capable hands who were able at the end to present it to the people of the jury and have it all make sense, because it was a crazy convoluted case. And with a lot of just crazy religious creations and different things, but we're going to be forever grateful to these people. They're amazing. Even the people that came out to court every day and would stand at 6 o'clock in the morning to try and get in and support our families and just be here, we're thankful to them. We felt their prayers. All of you who have been here from the beginning and our families, we feel that. So thank you to everybody. Thank you for Judge Boyce. That guy is amazing. We need people like him on the Supreme Court. He is the most fair, judicious person I've ever seen in my life. And I actually like to watch court on TV. So there you go. Yeah, we just send our love. We're appreciative as a family. Thank you.
So, you know, that's another member of the family delivering an impact statement. Good job by her. To recap what we've been talking about for the last almost, I guess, hour and a half. Yeah, we went over probably what we would have thought we were, was that it was, of course, announced yesterday. Chad Daybell is sentenced to death. And those are the charges: conspiracy to commit first degree murder in regards to Tylee Ryan, and first-degree murder, Tylee Ryan; conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, J.J. Vallow; first-degree murder, J.J. Vallow; conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, Tammy Daybell; and first-degree murder, Tammy Daybell. For that, those crimes, and probably a lot more crimes that's not listed on this thing, he's sentenced to the death penalty. Mike, your final words.
Billy, I think that final words, justice was slow. The wheels of justice turned very slowly, but it looks like justice was done. Whatever happens to Mr. Daybell, he'll never be able to hurt anybody. And, you know, his wife will never be able to hurt anybody ever again. And so that's a good thing. Pray for the victims of these two beautiful children and Tammy. They didn't deserve whatever they got. It was horrible. And to be killed by someone you love, a member of your family, that's got to be horrific. Pray for their souls. And thank you for tuning in today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Folks, I'm Bill Cannon from Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. On behalf of myself and Professor Mike Geary, have a great Sunday, and we'll see you the next time. Thank you. One episode, just ain't enough.